So welcome to this meditation class, held every Saturday afternoon throughout the year, and one way or another, during the outside of the rains retreat, which is usually from July to October, that's when we have the monks or the nuns come to teach this class. So today it's myself giving the class, and it's a class of how to do the meditation in a way which you can take the peace and relaxation deeper and deeper and deeper. One of the points which I emphasize, which I'm surprised other people don't point out so much, is the addition of kindness to the mindfulness. I do have some hay fever here, and it's sometimes a bit itchy. And the mindfulness plus kindness I call kindfulness. And that kindfulness does take the meditation much, much deeper. And the reason is, it's the kindness which allows the body to relax and also the mind to relax. I often focus on the body first of all, because you have more experience with your body and learning how to relax it. Later on, you use those same techniques to relax your mind, and as you relax the mind, that becomes the way of keeping the mind really still and pleasant in the state we call like samadhi. Samadhi is an old word. It's used in many different meditation traditions. Its core meaning is stillness. So the kindness allows the mind to become still. To understand this, Ajahn Chah would often point out, as I'm seeing in front of me right now, the leaves on the trees and on the bushes. Those leaves, you can see all of them in the park over there, all those leaves are moving because of the wind. When the wind blows, the leaves move. But if we want those leaves to be still, perfectly still, all we need to do is not hold them still. That will tire us. It's almost impossible. There's too many leaves. All we need to do is to make sure that the wind is not blowing. When that wind doesn't blow, the leaves still move, only less and less and less, until those leaves become perfectly still by themselves. And the reason is that that is like their nature. They are still if there's nothing to move them. And once that wind stops or you protect those bushes or trees from the wind, then you know it'll become perfectly still. With a stillness which never tires you, you're not holding it still, you're letting it be still, protecting it from all the disturbances. And that little simile was very powerful. It's very true. You can put it into practice and it works. It's very good simile of how people can meditate. The nature of your mind is to be still. The only reason it moves is because something makes it move. And that which makes it move is usually called your wanting. Doing something, hoping for something, trying to fix up something. All this stuff which as human beings we do far too much of, doing stuff. That's one of the reasons why that one of the greatest teachings of meditation is those simple words, let go. Don't do anything. And trust in your body and mind that when it becomes still, amazing things happen. Unexpected things happen. After a while, we learn how to keep our mind still and our body still, and like healings happen. Instead of actually doing something, we relax. When we relax, the body tends to heal itself. As I'm saying, having hay fever. But it's true, when you really do relax deeply, things even like hay fever tend to lessen and become less of a burden or a hindrance. But the point is that we need to have that kindness together with the awareness, the kindfulness, and that heals things. I'm not sure of your experiences, but so often in life, if you've got an injury or a sickness or anything which is like a problem for your body, keep it to the body first of all, a little bit of kindness goes a long way to relaxing everything. Relaxing everything means that you don't have this sense of fear and tension around wounds or around tumors or around other injuries to your body. You're surrounding it with this kindness which tends to open it up. By opening it up, I mean you're opening it up to the body's own ways of healing itself. And it's a weird thing to know, but it's true. In Indian medicine, because the Buddhism started in India, they used to call it the winds going through the body. And if there was some problem in your body, it was like those energy streams were blocked. And the job of traditional medicine, or in this case, kindfulness, was to open up those blockages so the streams of healing energy through your own body can be freed. Obviously, in Chinese medicine, they call that the qi. This energy force is going through your body. When they get blocked, they can't flow properly. There you have illnesses. So, of course, I was not born in India. I don't know much about Chinese medicine. But nevertheless, you can be mindful and kind enough to see that actually happening. There's one phenomena in meditation I've been talking about recently, which is called like hot spots in your body. Sometimes when you're meditating, you get pretty peaceful and you find one part of your body is like really warm, pleasantly so, not unpleasantly, while other parts of the body are at its normal temperature. And you can experience it very easily, it's very clear. And you ask yourself, what are those hot spots? And the stories I usually tell to emphasize this, were stories like just the lady who was in one of the early retreats came to say at the interview that during her meditation, her shoulders were really warm and are much hotter than the other parts of their body, and she wondered why. And I asked her, I said, when did you have your car accident? I remember this particular lady said, you really have got psychic powers. I never told you about that. How on earth did you know? And I said, it's not psychic powers. This is just logic, reason. The most common injury, you know, for neck problems, shoulder problems, is the whiplash which people have when they have a car accident. And I said, and I just was adding one and one to make two. Now, you had this hot spot in your body which was meant that healing was coming to that part of your body, and healing was coming to that part of your body. And what type of injury could you have there? I say, no, mostly like a whiplash, a car accident. And you find if you have those accidents, those injuries, whether in sport or falling over off a motorbike or just normal sort of health problems, you find that that part of your body needs some energy. And what happens when you meditate, you stop controlling your body, you allow it to be, you relax it, just like the leaves on the trees, they become perfectly still, and that allows things to flow. In this particular case, the energy starts to flow into that part of the body which really needs it. And for her, it was the back. And said, you probably had that whiplash with your car accident, and it took a while for you to relax what you thought was going back to good health. But there's still some more work which your body knows what to do and how to do it. And it's wonderful you allowed it to happen. And you will probably feel, and she already said this to me, she felt so much better and more relaxed in that area afterwards. Those parts of meditation where you allow your body to relax, be really peaceful. Allows energy to flow to these places. When they do flow to these places, you can feel it as good energy, warm energy, healing these parts of your body which really need it. So that's actually what happens when we're kindful. We let things be. And when instead of trying to heal things or trying to relax, we let things be, and that's when they relax to the max. And I say relax to the max because, you know, that's the only way to really be still and peaceful. And when you can do this, you know, you find great benefits. First of all, to your body. That's just to your body. You do the same thing later on in the meditation to your mind. What is your mind? Many people we have debates. Is there a mind? In Buddhism, we don't even question that. Of course there is a mind. Even in physics, of course there is a mind. Otherwise, quantum physics doesn't work. You need this thing to observe, to see, to know. And it's also, just in meditation, it's very clear there's also a mind. The way we can prove this is actually knowing that when a person, there's so many bits of evidence, when you get into deep meditation, your five senses turn off. That's almost like a definition of deep meditation. You can't see, hear, smell, taste, or touch. Physical feelings don't exist for you for that time, but you're perfectly aware. There's so many stories about this. There's one gentleman who came here, and he had this chronic migraine. And he said the only way he could get out of that chronic migraine was to find a quiet, dark place, sit down, and he said, go inside. He didn't have any formal instructions on meditation, but he could go deep inside his body and mind to where that migraine couldn't reach. And he said, has a wonderful time there. And the reason I realized that these were the deep meditations he was doing was because that at that time he was a soldier in the British Army. He was a sergeant, and he was in charge of some troops which were going on exercise. He had one of these migraines, and he just went into a dark barn somewhere, sat down, went inside, and just lost contact with his body. He was quite peaceful deep inside himself. It was only later, when the soldiers left that place, they realized they hadn't taken their sergeant. They left him in the barn. And so they turned their truck around, quickly went inside the barn, lifted him up, and dropped him in the back of the lorry, the truck. And soldiers aren't that gentle. They're good men, but sometimes they're a bit rough, and they were rushed. So they didn't sort of put him in there softly. They dropped him in. And he never felt a thing. And then he came out of his deep sense of going inside. And when he came out of that, what am I doing in the truck? I was in the shed. What's happened? And the soldiers told him what had happened. For those of you who've been around a long time, that was Ron's story. You know, Ron and Terry's story. Ron's ashes are around the back here somewhere. He was our caretaker and treasurer and goodness knows what else for many years. But, you know, he told me those stories when he was a soldier and had those migraines. The migraines almost taught him how to let go of his body and go deep inside. But apparently when those migraines disappeared, he couldn't do that meditation anymore. He's happy the migraines had gone, but he missed the deep meditations. Interesting. But anyway, this is what can happen. That once you go deep inside, the body is out of your control. You leave it alone. It looks after itself. And it looks after itself very, very well. And that's where a lot of healings happen. It's weird, but it's just the way that when you do meditate, you relax those five senses, go inside the mind, your meditation gets very deep, very pleasant, and very beneficial for your health, your happiness and your wisdom. Okay, this is what we usually do, just 15 minutes of just an introduction, say a few things, and now we'll do the 40 minutes, 45 minutes guided meditation. I hope that's good for you. I'll be giving most of the instructions at the beginning of the meditation, then being quiet and letting you go at your own pace. And I'll ring the gong towards the end of the meditation, so to let people know the meditation is over. Is that okay? Once again, for those of you who come for the introduction to meditation, that is being held in the room to my right here. We used to have it in the big room because of trying to keep the separation required for the COVID regulations. Now, because there's no mandatory requirement to isolate or separate and have social distancing, that's why now we can actually be in our next room. Okay. And for those of you who need to relax even more during the meditation, you can always go to the letting go room. And the letting go rooms are just, if you go outside there, and you can see the toilets to the right. I call them letting go room. And it's true, because sometimes people have a hard time when they go to the toilets. They don't know how to relax, they're in too much of a rush. That's why, if you know how to relax to the max, let things be, then you have good intestinal health as well as health everywhere else. The body needs to do what the body needs to do, and you don't try and control it. You work with your body as a good friend. Okay? So, now, let's do the meditation. So most of you are sitting on a stool or on a chair or just on some cushions. So please, first of all, make sure that you're as comfortable as you can possibly get. And once you're reasonably comfortable, be more precise to make sure that you are fully comfortable, as relaxed as you possibly can be in your body. We need to have more mindfulness and more kindness focused on our body. And to do this, I always do a scanning of my body. And starting off from the lowest part of my body, the furthest from my head, which is the feet, I learn how to be aware of the sensations and feelings in my feet, even in my toes. When I first started this, I thought this was crazy. Who cares about how your toes feel? What's the purpose of that? The purpose is you start there and you build up your abilities and sensitivities to the feelings in your feet. And as you build up that sensitivity, you have stronger mindfulness. And when you add the kindness, you can actually experience relaxation happening. You know how to relax your own toes. And when you start with those, later on you'll be able to relax even more important areas of your body, just like your heart, your lungs, your stomach, and bring yourself to a greater sense of ease, of physical health and mental health. So I'm just focusing on my toes. I can feel them. Relax them. Until I can experience something which I recognize, because I do this often. I can recognize the toes are tingling with a sense of ease. It's as if someone's giving you a foot massage, or you're soaking your feet in warm water. You feel the delight of relaxing every part of your toes. And you feel you can do this, it does actually work. And then you move your awareness from the toes to the feet, which doesn't mean just the soles of the feet, but the flesh of your feet, the bones, the uppers, the heels, everything to do with the feet. You see what sensations are there. You experience them, and you're kind to them. That softness, that warmth, that compassion eases any sensations there. And if there's any part of that, those feet which are squashed, my toe is squashed, so I'm going to adjust that. And then you'll experience the feet being the best, deepest ease you can possibly make. Once your feet are relaxed through mindfulness and kindness, you move up to your ankles. I can feel the sensation, which I recognize is specific to my ankles. And I allow that feeling to kind of expand, to be at ease, to relax. So nothing is being held tight, nothing is contracted. It's all expansive and loose and free. Those are the sorts of imaginations which I give even to the muscles and everything else in my ankles, to bring them to a state of relaxation. I move my attention up, my calves, the bones, the covering of skin and the muscles, and everything else which is in my calves. I experience them. You find it difficult to experience your body with one of your hands. Touch it. The touching of these parts of your body with your fingers establishes contact. And once you have contact, you don't need to touch it anymore. You can feel it without touching. When you can experience it without physical touch, just like your mind touching that area of your body, then you can loosen any tightness or tension. Sometimes I imagine there's so many strings in those muscles, and I loosen every string so there's no tightness anywhere in the muscles of my calves. And I move to the knees. My knees are in good health. But you may have had an accident, fallen off a bicycle, or just had an accident doing exercise. And those bruises, that little trauma in your knee, takes a while to heal. If you can open up the area around that wound or that bruise or that trauma, open it up and allow good energy to flow into it. You find it feels so much better. You allow healing in instead of trying to close up, trying to protect it. And as you relax your knees again, soon they feel like the rest of my lower legs, given attention, relax, receiving kindness and good energy. and they feel at ease again. And I move up to my thighs. I can feel all those muscles there. My thighs feel at ease this afternoon. If you've been exercising, running around, and sometimes they are tense. They need attention and kindness to be able to relax everything. And after relaxing your thighs, you go to your butt. It's the top of the thighs, two big bundles of muscles on either side. And my buttocks, I can feel the pressure of the cushion on my buttocks, which are sort of reacting to the weight on top of them. All I do is to make sure that's as even and easy as possible, but it's still a feeling which I'm always surprised that feeling can disappear. I just make sure it's as comfortable as possible and as even as possible. And when I've done the best there, I've cared for it, then it will disappear as I move further up my back. It's a way of being kind to your body. And I go to my waist. I do have a belt on. My belt is a bit tight. I'm going to loosen it again. Maybe I had too much for lunch. I don't think that was a maybe. And then relax that waist as much as I can. And also to straighten my back. You don't have to have a straight back to get deep meditation. If you're on a chair and you want to lean back, fine. As long as you're comfortable enough for those feelings not to disturb you. So I can experience the muscles and the bones in my back and relax them as much as I can to care for them. When I get into the optimum, the best feeling posture I can, then I leave them alone. And then I go to the front of my body, starting from the base, around the waist, and go up my digestive tract to make sure that everything is at ease and relaxed. And when I teach this, I'm doing it with you, I'm not just playing. And I give all my digestive tract as much attention and kindness as I can. And by doing that, everything relaxes and is at ease. And if there's some place in my digestive tracts, the colon or intestines, which are still tight or tense, I pause there and give it extra energy, extra kindness, as if I had some invisible hand and I was stroking that part of my body to make it more at ease. I get to my stomach. So I move up my body, every part of it I give attention to, awareness, and as much kindness as I possibly can make. Focus to a part of my own body. If you can't be kind to your own body, how can you practice kindness to others? I go up, further up past my stomach, to my lungs. When you have hay fever, the poor old lungs sometimes struggle. So I want to be kind to my lungs, to to relax them, bring them to a state of ease. They don't need to breathe so much air. So I let them relax, be at ease. And from my lungs, go up to my heart. Any other organ I can think of over there which has caused me any trouble. To be aware, to be kind, to relax. Until my whole torso is like my legs, like perfectly at ease. I do go to the top of my torso, the shoulders. One way to relax the shoulders, a quick way, is just to tense up the shoulders first of all, to make them as tight as you possibly can, and then let go. And usually, my shoulders, when I let go of the tension there, they become more at ease than when I started. And I know those feelings of relaxation in the body, they feel pleasant. That's one of the incentives to relax even more deeply. I go down from my shoulders, down my arms, past the elbows and wrists. If you have any problems there, go much slower. Sometimes just spending time and kindness is all that's needed to heal, to relax, to bring the muscles, the bones, the ligaments, everything in the body to a greater sense of ease. It's the same process which brings your mind to a deeper sense of ease, awareness and kindness. And I go to my hands, and my hands, I usually adjust the fingers one last time to make sure that my hands are happy, at ease, content. Because when they are, I will not need to move them until the meditation is over. And then I go back up to my shoulders and neck. I always make sure my head is not too far forward or too far back, or just leaning too far to either side. I kind of balance my head on top of my neck. Find the optimum position. And then lastly, I always found this very helpful. I'm aware of the feelings of tightness in my forehead muscles, around my nose, around my mouth, around my eyes. Because when your face becomes a recipient of that, those tense muscles, that people can recognize that as a result of the emotions that you are troubled with. When you're afraid, those muscles tense up in one way, so people can see what emotion you are expressing on your facial muscles. When you're tired, those muscles appear in a different way. When you're happy and energized, again those muscles appear in a different guise. So now you look at those muscles with your mindfulness. You're so kind to them. I can feel the muscles around my eyes easing, relaxing. And the muscles around my nose. They were struggling with the irritation of hay fever earlier. But now they feel very relaxed around my mouth. All these muscles of your face relaxing to the max. You're aware and kind. That's all you need to do. And then, instead of looking at the body as a series of connected parts, you connect everything together and look at your body as a unit, as one thing. relaxed and balanced, at ease. At this point, I wait for that specific feeling of relaxation which I've got to recognize. Here it comes. The delight of relaxation. Relaxation feels really pleasant. And this is also teaching us a great insight of meditation. When the meditation is going in the correct direction, even the mind feels peace, and that peace feels delightful. Brings you a lot of happiness. And that delight, that happiness, that is the glue which keeps your attention on the correct meditation object. You're watching that relaxed body, or later on the relaxed mind, because it's so pleasant to do so. You don't need any effort at all. And the mind grabs your attention and keeps it. So just indulge for a minute or so on the delightful feeling of a relaxed body. And then I go to my mind. I ask myself, how peaceful am I? Because peace is an important part of your mind. And why is your mind more peaceful some days than others? What causes peace in your mind? One thing is being in the present moment. The past and the future is what disturbs the mind. It gives it business, problems to solve. In this moment, it's more pure. This moment has just arrived. It's here. And you're kind to this moment. Like you're kind to feelings in your body. And those feelings of this present moment relax. They become easier to watch. And you add kindness to the present moment. it becomes a very delightful meditation object to watch. The delightful presence. And soon, one can go deeper into the silent present moment awareness, where you don't give things names. You don't have a running commentary on what is happening. You observe, you know, without this thought which thinks it knows better than your bare attention. Just know, hear, feel, without trying to capture truth in words. And that usually makes the peace more stable, more profound, more delightful. I am now going to be quiet and let you carry on with the meditation in your own way. When it comes close to the end of the meditation, I will start speaking again. Getting close now to the end of the meditation period. How do you feel? What's it like inside? What are you aware of right now? How much is your mind relaxed and come closer to peace? And how is your mind? Is it still thinking? Still trying to capture solutions with words? After a while, one can hear, but without reacting. Just noise. Just feelings. And your whole body and mind is at ease. It doesn't tighten up. It's loose and free. And spend this last minute just reflecting, enjoying the result of this 45-minute meditation. How much better do you feel now than when you began? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. And when the last sound from the gong disappears, then you may open your eyes to finish the meditation. Very good. There we are. And usually at the end of the 45-minute meditation, we have the opportunities to ask some questions and get hopefully some good answers. So if there's any questions anyone has from the floor about the meditation, please. You may ask. If not, we'll go to the questions over the internet. Okay, internet questions. Here we go. Because this class, it is live streamed in many countries. First question from Germany. What convinces you in meditation there is reincarnation? Any personal experience? Can you leave the body and travel while in jhana? Bhante Rani Vihara said so. Please clarify. So, the idea of rebirth, reincarnation, what happens in the meditation is after a while you go so deep in the meditation you can't feel your body, you can't hear during the time you're in deep meditation, and you've got no physical sensations. Basically, your five senses have been shut down. And those five senses are basically, you know, what's to do with your body. And often, if a doctor comes and checks up on you, are you alive or are you dead, that's how they check up. They put a flashlight in your eye to see if your eye does anything. They speak into your ear. And if you don't respond, they conclude that you may be dead. The reason I say that is because when those five senses shut down, you're still very much aware, more awareness than in your usual state of affairs. And that gives you the first indication that, you know, these five senses are not who you are. This is how the body observes existence. But your mind is something more powerful and more deep. And that's what happens when you die. What is death anyway? Just your body, which supports these five senses, just breaks down and the five senses stop. That's not the end of things, because the mind is still there. It's one of the reasons why you have this phenomena, which I've been mentioning quite a lot recently, called terminal lucidity, which means that when you get close to death, you may be on morphine, you may be in a coma, you may have been suffering from dementia beforehand, but those last few minutes or moments of your death, it's like you have clarity. The brain is not working anymore. The mind takes over. That sixth sense is now active and free from the physical brain, which means that you become much more aware than when you have a brain. You can remember everybody. I've never experienced this personally with people with dementia, but many people have had that experience. You know, you're with a loved one who has not recognized who you are for many months, even years. And then at the very end of their life, they say, "Nice to see you again. Where have you been?" They know your names, they know everything. They have clarity, terminal lucidity. What's happening there is the brain has stopped working. And the mind takes over. And this is actually where we have a little bit of evidence of rebirth. But one of the best pieces of evidence is that because when you've emerged from a deep meditation, what we call the five hindrances, and you can look in the book what those are, but they're basically the things which distort your perception, which weaken it. Things like wanting. Now, what makes the leaves move in that simile? And its opposite of denial, negativity, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, which are not balanced enough to be able to see clearly. And last thing is this thing called doubt. When those five hindrances are working, of course you cannot see deeply. And what you do see, there's always some uncertainty to it. But what happens if you are in a deep meditation, you're just emerging from that deep meditation, the five hindrances are still either weak or just not there at all, you do such things as ask yourself, what's my earliest memory? See if you can go back to an experience so many years ago, decades ago, even a previous life ago. And if those five hindrances have been subdued, then of course that memory will come up. And it's quite staggering, some of those memories you can recall. Actually, recall is not the right word. It's like you're living there again. You're back there as a little baby or a person in the previous life. And if it really is a true meditation-based recall of a previous existence, remember the five hindrances have been subdued, in particular doubt has gone. Which means that what you remember, what you recall, you don't even need to check up, was this true or not? It just has this quality of even being more clear than when you are looking at me right now. There's no deceit, true, real, and that's how you feel when you have these types of memories of previous lives. And so you can actually just, you know it's true, but you can check if you like. Go to the records. We have so many records now. Governments are into everything. So they have so many records of who you are, what you did, what your name was, who you married, who you didn't marry, where you lived. So you can always check that out. And that's what's wonderful when people do that, when they found out that what they remembered is actually true. Of course, it asks many lovely questions, like, where is that memory stored? And it's in a totally different body. There's no connection with this body and that body in your previous life. But it's true. You know that was you. That's fascinating when those type of things happen. And can you leave the body and travel while in the jhana? When you're in the jhana, no. Because the body doesn't exist for you. The whole idea of leaving a body doesn't exist. Those sorts of things happen afterwards or beforehand. But in the jhanas, you are still. You're not traveling anywhere or doing anything. You can imagine being really still. And so satisfied and so happy, there's no reason to go anywhere. You stay poised. Time has no meaning for you. I'm just describing, there's no theory. And when you're very still like that and time has no meaning, going anywhere, the idea makes no sense. Anyway, a follower in New Zealand. Meditation helps physical health or just mental spiritual? Can you please explain all those benefits? I don't have time to explain all those benefits because they're huge. The physical health, I've shared many stories of the physical health benefits of deep meditation. And one of my favorite ones is that time when I had food poisoning in my cave up in Bodhinyana Monastery. That cave's been there for a while now, so it's not recent. But that food poisoning, it was so painful, I had stomach cramps. So you were screaming, ah, ah, well, as the cramps came. And then, because you were in a cave, I had no choice. There was no telephone or anything to call. And if you did call the telephone, it would be such a long time before any ambulance came to Serpentine Monastery. And also, so I decided I don't need to do that, decided to use the meditation. You know, just simple things. You're mindful, you could be aware of those cramps, and you can see them as they're coming. And you were kind. I could relax, my body, especially that part which was cramping up over much. And the experience was that every time you had these cramps in your tummy, wherever it was, that the next one would always be less intense. You would relax in them little by little every time. And half an hour it took, by the end of half an hour, there was no stomach cramps left at all. And my body was perfectly healthy. And the spiritual thing, obviously, those are the physical cramps. What about the grief, anxiety, which can cramp our mind so we can't even enjoy the beautiful sunshine? We're worried about, the old auntie who passed away recently, or the fact that, you may not have a job when you go to work on Monday and you can't pay the bills. Ah! Those spiritual cramps, can also be relaxed. And after a while you can do as to your body, so to your mind, to be free, be at peace. You've still got a problem to do later on, but you don't cramp up about it. You don't over-exaggerate life. Hi Ajahn. How do you practice when you're living in a town that doesn't have community to support you? People have different belief and religion in meditation. Is meditation suitable for everyone, including those with anxiety? Absolutely. It's good for everybody. Is rest, is sleep good for everybody? Is water good for everybody? Air good for everybody? Meditation, peace and relaxation is great for everybody. What is anxiety anyway? It's just looking at the future with a negative mind. Something's going to happen to me. It's coming. Look behind you. It's coming. Whatever you do, the people... Interesting, you enjoyed that, didn't you? There's a certain pleasure in anxiety. That's why people watch these movies where they try and make you more anxious. And the reason for that is, with all these negative emotions, the pleasure in them is like you feel alive. You feel that, you know, you're sharing a planet with others who also share the pain of anxiety. People are addicted to pain and suffering. Believe it or not, that's why it's a very difficult thing to abandon. After a while you find that having no anxiety and just living in the moment, something will turn up, is a much more pleasant way of living. Yeah, if things go wrong, they go wrong. They're going to go wrong anyway. Don't be anxious about them. Just, you know, wait until it goes wrong and enjoy the time before it goes wrong. I always like that idea. When I plan for the future, things go wrong anyway. When I don't plan, they go wrong. And so either way, things go wrong. So I decide I'm not going to plan for the future. And that way I can enjoy it before it goes wrong. Very good. And anyway, in a town that doesn't have community support to support you, in the old days that would be difficult. But now there's a wonderful thing called the internet. You have a community which supports you here. This bigger community which is online. And don't think we don't care for you. Of course we do. It's amazing how many people create this internet link, make it work, come here early, they don't get paid. And they just make this available for people in so many different parts of the world. And every now and again, I think you may know that next week I will not be in Nolamara. I will still be here, but for me next week here will be London. And you'll be in Nolamara. But I remember the last time when I went to London, and I was in Paddington Station. I was moving from the underground service to the mainline service to get a train somewhere. And as I was moving through the concourse of Paddington Railway Station, this woman came running towards me, maybe in her mid-20s, and she was Afro-English. And the conversation was weird. That's why I always remember it. She said, "You're the YouTube monk." That's what she called me. And then she looked at me, "Yes, you are. What are you doing in Paddington Station? You're supposed to be in Australia." And what had happened, she explained, she'd been going through a divorce, a separation, and she was suicidal. And the psychologists and psychiatrists and other people counseling her, they didn't connect with her. So out of desperation, she went onto YouTube. She found one of my talks. And that worked for her. And she said about 5 or 6 hours, one after the other, she binged on some of the YouTube talks from the BSWA. "Thank you so much. You saved my life." That's what I mean about community. Even if you're in London, you think you're so far away from the monks and nuns in Perth. You're not. Sometimes you see us in Paddington Station. Sometimes you see this all over the world. It's also one of the reasons why I keep telling the monks and the nuns, when you go places, if you can travel by public transport, let people see you. It's a wonderful thing. Okay. I've got to do only 4 questions because it's getting a bit late. How do we stop the winds of craving and wanting to do things during meditation? How do you stop these things? There's a much better thing to do, and that's learn the beauty of stillness. And how do you stop other cravings in life? And you realize they're just not worth it. It's a moment of happiness and pleasure and many sort of days of pain afterwards. And just basically, stillness is more delightful than thinking. How many thoughts have you thought in your whole life? Where have they got you? How many times have you been really still, peaceful, hardly a thought in your mind going on, perfectly aware, just watching the tree leaves just flutter in the wind, watch the sun just shine off those green and orange leaves. I really enjoy nature when it's silent. You'll find that silence allows you to have far more joy and peace and happiness. You see things much more deeply and appreciate them much more. It's one of those experiences people have when they go on retreats. They go to a place like Janagwa, they say, what a beautiful place this is. How wonderful the food is. The food is ordinary. The place actually is at least kind of beautiful, but it looks much more beautiful when you have a still mind. And the food, once your mind is still, you pick up so much from every morsel of food. First retreat I went on in 1970, I think, or 71. And this was in boarding houses in Cambridge during the vacation, with the food cooked by the boarding house cook. English food cooked by a cheap chef. Boiled potatoes, boiled cabbage or something. Everything was just boiled. It had no taste to it at all. If it wasn't boiled, it had been steamed, but it didn't taste nice, so I thought. But the first day there, I couldn't believe it. The food was delicious. What was wrong there? There was nothing wrong. My mind, after a few days of meditation, was so sensitive. I could pick up whatever remnant of flavor was left after all that boiling. And it tasted delicious. That's what happens. So you don't need craving and wanting. Craving and wanting spoils your enjoyment of delight and pleasure. Even in meditation, when you want some stillness, you never find it. When you don't want anything in the whole world, stillness, joy comes to you. That's how it works. So anyway, okay, just give the last simile. It's an old simile, but I'm sure you all remember it and appreciate it. That is of the donkey and the carrot simile. I think you all know that one, but anyway, here it comes. You can't get a donkey to move by hitting it with a stick. Donkeys are stubborn. Instead, you tie the stick to the donkey's neck, so the front of the stick is 2 feet in front of the donkey's head or mouth. On the end of the stick, you put a string. On the end of the string, you put a carrot. And the donkey sees the carrot just in front of it and goes walking and then running after it. Doesn't matter how fast that donkey runs after the carrot is always 2 foot in front of it, never catches it. Just like people in life, there's so many things you aspire for. You can see it, it's right there. Peace, like retirement. Retirement's only a little bit longer, just work a bit longer, then you have enough money for retirement. You go forward, and then the government sort of increases the age when you can retire before you get a pension.
You know what it's like.
But that's not how you catch carrots. The donkey is smarter. He runs full speed after that carrot and then stops and doesn't move. And he sees that carrot go further away from her. Further and further and further. It's never been so far away. When you let go, that's what happens sometimes. You think the meditation's not working. Be patient. Because when that carrot goes to about 4 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, then the carrot stops and comes towards the donkey. Until that carrot is 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, as usual, but now coming full speed towards the donkey's mouth. And it just swings right next to the donkey's mouth. I think you all know the final part of this story. You have to remember the kindness. Just meditation, just mindfulness is not good enough. You need kindness. The donkey has to say to that carrot, "Carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Come in." Now that's a funny story, but that's very profound. That's how meditation works. You've been chasing peace or whatever in meditation for so many years, some of you. You chased it, stop. Watch that meditation peace go further away from you than it's ever been before. But don't move. And it starts coming towards you. You come so close, you've caught the carrot. Thank you all for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, if there are any questions, more questions, you can please come up and ask them afterwards. We can now, monks are going to bow 3 times. We don't do the arahang anymore, we just do the bowing.